This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
California's new mandate. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. On this Thursday, August 12th, glad you could be with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
California is requiring all teachers and staff in public and private schools either get the COVID-19 vaccine or be tested weekly.
Nearly a million customers in the Midwest lost power from heavy rains and 60-mile-an-hour winds. More rough weather is on tap for today.
The newest intelligence assessment by the U.S. finds the capital of Afghanistan could fall to the Taliban within a month.
And our weight loss ads form of body shaming. Pinterest thinks so and is banning that type of marketing.
You know, this has been a fairly common source of content where a lot of people will share, for example, diet recipes and that kind of thing. Now, those are still allowed, but advertising, not allowed anymore.
Nathan Bomey at USA Today on the dilemma facing weight loss businesses. The Taliban continues to push its offensive in Afghanistan that could reward the terrorist group with the capital of Kabul within the next 3 months. Reuters is reporting that Afghan government forces battled Taliban fighters in and around several cities earlier today. Meanwhile, the group has captured 8 provincial capitals in less than a week and are threatening to take at least 3 more. The speed of the Taliban advance has sparked widespread recriminations of President Biden's decision to withdraw U.S. troops and leave the Afghan government to fight alone. White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
Ultimately, the Afghan National Security Defense Forces have the equipment, numbers, and training to fight back. They have what they need. What they need to determine is if they have the political will to fight back.
The Taliban control about 2/3 of Afghanistan, with the last of the U.S.-led international forces set to leave by the end of the month. Meanwhile, thousands of families are reportedly fleeing the provinces in hope of finding safety in the capital of Kabul. In the 1980s, the English rock band The Smiths asked the musical question, "How soon is now?" That might be applicable as U.S. officials consider how soon the Afghan capital may fall to the Taliban. Dan Lamoff, Pentagon reporter at The Washington Post, says the Biden administration is preparing for Afghanistan's capital to fall far sooner than feared only weeks ago, as a rapid disintegration of security has prompted the revision of an already stark intelligence assessment. Dan, what's up here?
Yeah, I think it's a reflection of what we've been watching in Afghanistan over the last several weeks, and especially the last week, where the Taliban has really just been on the march. They've taken over numerous provincial capitals. They are in charge of a good portion of the western and northern parts of the country at this point. And really, Kabul and the immediate area around it is the last main holdout.
Boy, are we not good trainers of the Afghan military? What's going on here?
To boil a very complex thing down to the basics, I think the United States has thrown a great deal of time and energy at this, but there was always this somewhat fatal flaw that the Afghan government, on many levels, had a lot of corruption in it. So as you're watching this play out, you know, there are some very basic things that Afghan soldiers are not getting at this point. With the U.S. military removed from the equation already, you're looking at basic things like, do the Afghan soldiers on the ground have bullets? Do they have food? And it's just becoming easier to give up, give in, and go home.
Jeez. All right, so the timeline now of the fall of Kabul, as you're saying, you quoted at least one person said it could come in 30 days. I mean, that's far from the initial predictions of, 6 to 12 months?
That's right. Back in June, the U.S. intelligence community assessed that 6 to 12 months after the U.S. military being out, we could be in this kind of situation. Things have come very fast this summer. You know, at this point, the U.S. military has not officially called an end to the withdrawal, but I was on the ground last month, and I watched them roll up the flag and turn it over. At this point, they're doing some airstrikes, but they've got a lot of limitations on it because they don't have the forces on the ground that can guide those airstrikes on the target. So what you're seeing is sort of the U.S. military trying to do what it can from a distance. They're still flying some B-52s and that kind of thing, but they just don't have the reach and the ability to do what they did before.
Mm. We're speaking with Dan Lamothe, Pentagon reporter at The Washington Post. His piece is called U.S. Officials Warn Collapse of Afghan Capital Could Come Sooner Than Expected. You know, we seem to go back to this, and I'll ask again, what's the answer, right? I mean, nobody wants troops there, generally speaking, but nobody wants to see Kabul collapse and create openings for Iran or Russia.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the rock and a hard place, you know, because the basics of this are that you can either let things play out the way they have been, and you will end up with some combination of either a Taliban victory or a civil war between the holdouts in the Afghan government and the forces loyal to them and the Taliban. That's, you know, that was a warning that the last four-star general on the ground, General Miller, gave not long before he departed. He was concerned about that. The alternative is you can keep a small number of forces on the ground and try and, you know, push back on this, not unlike they did with the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria over the last several years. That's a long-term commitment on top of the 20 years we've already got in at this point.
Yeah. What does President Biden say, or the White House in general, about this?
President Biden was pretty direct. He was asked about this, not about the assessment, just generally about the fall of these cities and other things we've seen recently. And he's looking at it very much as we've already spent more than $1 trillion there. You know, we've already got in excess of 2,300 American service members who have been killed there, 20,000 wounded, and he looks at it and says, we don't need to do this anymore.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Lamothe, Pentagon reporter at The Washington Post. California has become the first state to require that all school teachers and staff at public and private schools show proof of vaccination or submit to regular coronavirus testing. The move represents an escalation in the state's effort to ensure that schools start on time and in person amid a recent nationwide surge in COVID-19 cases triggered by the Delta variant. Governor Gavin Newsom.
This is a sustainable way to keeping our schools open and to address the number one anxiety that parents like myself have. I have four young children, and that is knowing that the schools are doing everything in their power to keep our kids safe.
Elsewhere, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is now vowing to take any school or local government to court if they defy his executive order barring mask mandates after he challenged a Dallas mask order. Austin and San Antonio also said they would defy the governor's order and require facial coverings for students and adults while in the classroom. Coming up next, the road ahead for New York's new governor.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you, and to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be.
Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Thanks for spending time with us. The first woman to be governor of New York says she's planning for a culture change in Albany as she takes over from Andrew Cuomo, who resigned over sexual harassment allegations. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, who will take the reins in 12 days, said while Mr. Cuomo had pledged to support a smooth transition, the two had not been close.
I'm going to stand right here. At the end of my term, whenever it ends, no one will ever describe my administration is a toxic work environment.
Ms. Hochul says she'll continue meeting with current and potential cabinet members. She says she is not planning on keeping some Cuomo staffers who were named in a damaging state attorney general report, which found that the Cuomo administration fostered a toxic workplace. Separately, the attorney general is investigating whether Mr. Cuomo misused state resources to produce his pandemic memoir, and federal prosecutors in Brooklyn are investigating how the state handled COVID-19 in nursing homes. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
California will become the first state to require all teachers and school staff to get vaccinated or undergo weekly COVID testing as schools return from summer break amid growing concerns about the highly contagious Delta variant. Governor Gavin Newsom.
All of our staff, not just teachers, credentialed staff, paraeducators, custodial staff, the bus drivers, folks that are critical to supporting the entire school ecosystem.
The new policy applies to both public and private schools and will affect more than 800,000 employees.
Number two.
The FDA is nearing a decision to authorize COVID booster shots for certain people with weak immune systems. The agency is closing in on the booster shot authorization amid evidence vaccines are less effective protecting immunocompromised people from COVID than they are in protecting the general population. Meanwhile, the CDC is urging all pregnant women to get vaccinated as hospitals and hotspots are seeing disturbing numbers of unvaccinated mothers to be seriously ill with the virus.
Number three.
There are some signs that new cases worldwide and in the U.S. may be peaking. The White House says some states with surging caseloads are seeing new infections level off. U.S. vaccinations have picked up substantially in the past few weeks, especially in states with low immunization rates. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power in the Midwest. Following a series of storms, residents are in the dark this morning in parts of Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Illinois. DTE Energy says heavy rains and 60-mile-an-hour winds damage more than 2,000 power lines. Some customers won't get power restored until the weekend. Fred, the first named storm in a month, has been downgraded to a tropical depression, but it's expected to strengthen again ahead of landfall in Florida, possibly as early as tomorrow. The risk of Fred impact the Sunshine State is increasing as it brings heavy rain and flooding to the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Jeopardy has made it official. Producer Mike Richards will take over as host of the long-running syndicated show, while former Blossom and Big Bang Theory actress Mayim Bialik will host primetime and spin-off versions of the show. Since January, the popular game show has used a number of guest hosts following last fall's death of Alex Trebek.
Man, so no Aaron Rodgers? He's going to keep playing football, I guess?
I guess he's going to be on the field.
Man. All right, thank you, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the banning of weight loss ads.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit MichiganBusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's MichiganBusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Before and after ads now have their own before and after. When a social media company said it's banning weight loss ads, it marked the latest development in a larger cultural shift that's forcing companies to rethink their products, services, and marketing. Here's This Morning's Jennifer Koschenka.
Body shaming is out. Body positivity is in. What does that mean for weight loss ads and products? Nathan Bomey is with USA Today. Nathan, what did social media company Pinterest recently decide to do?
Well, they banned weight loss ads altogether. In fact, they had already banned things like before and after pictures, which I think many of us on the internet have seen. You often see those sort of at the bottom of news articles, and they're often really crass images that advertise products that may or may not actually work. But those ads have been long gone from Pinterest. Now they're going even further and saying all weight loss ads, anything that advertises a weight loss service or a product, such as a testimonial, is not allowed anymore on Pinterest, where you know, this has been a fairly common source of content where a lot of people will share, for example, diet recipes and that kind of thing. Now, those are still allowed, but advertising, not allowed anymore.
Is that a pretty radical move?
This is pretty unusual. Yeah, we haven't seen this from the other social media companies, and but it reflects a cultural shift. It reflects the fact that the culture is moving more in this direction of body positivity, and we're seeing other companies that are making similar moves in the sense that, you know, they are realizing that they can't really emphasize the weight loss elements of their business as much as they used to. So you take a look at a company like Weight Watchers, of course, which has been around for decades and is very popular among people who are trying to shed some pounds. They changed their name a couple years ago to WW, which took a little while for people to get used to. And I think it's because they want to talk more about wellness now, a little bit less about weight loss, even though many of their customers are still using the products and classes to lose weight. And then another one is Atkins, the low-carb brand that many people have used historically to try to lose weight. You know, you may have seen the advertisements with Rob Lowe, former West Wing actor. He's not talking about weight loss in those ads. He's talking about healthy living.
Yeah, one of those ways of packaging, Nathan, is the use of new apps and fitness trackers. Talk about something like Newcomer Noom. What is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an app that is trying to give people options to, say, count their calories and kind of keep tabs on how they're eating, how they're living. And, I think that those are increasingly popular. You see the data that a pretty high percentage of Americans are now using an app to help, with their fitness.
So the people that are against the body shaming and are really promoting the body positivity, are they on board with apps like this?
I think so, but I think, again, it's about, giving people the ability to, giving them the ability to control how they, control more of the experience and to not be basically bombarded with imagery and messaging that makes them feel bad about themselves. I think that's the key. I think it's going to be a little bit less preachy, and we're not going to see as many images, these before and after images that you're still going to be on the internet. You're still going to see the testimonials, but I think we're going to see fewer of them just because there's a viscerally negative reaction that a lot of people have to those things now.
Nathan Bomey at USA Today with this morning's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Staying sharp is how businesses stay successful. But the guys at Harry's, they took it literally. Their business stays sharp because their products do. In a recent study, Harry's customers said their eighth shave was as smooth as their first. Redeem a Harry's trial set when you go to harrys.com/deal and see if you agree. They craft their blades in their own German factory to make sure they meet their high standards. They're so confident in them, they offer a 100% money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And the bottom line is, you get a great shave and end up looking pretty sharp as a result. Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/deal. You'll get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Visit harrys.com/deal to try Harry's today.
The information you need and the truth you demand. Start your day with America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, August 12. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. California requiring all teachers and staff get either vaccinated or routinely tested. Severe storms cause power outages in the Midwest. The White House wants OPEC to boost its oil output as the world continues emerging from the pandemic. A Northern Virginia school board is expanding the rights of transgender students, for example, allowing them to choose a sport based on their preferred identity. Newest census data being released today, and the Field of Dreams coming to life tonight for Major League Baseball. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. As lawmakers on Capitol Hill prepare to enact trillions in new spending for a range of investments, deficit hawks have begun to again raise alarms about an intermittent issue in Washington, the federal debt ceiling. Here to review what the debt ceiling is and why it's an issue is Matthew Brown, White House reporter at USA Today. Matt, what is it exactly?
So the debt ceiling is basically a financial quirk that the Congress invented itself about a century ago. It's a policy that was originally meant to be basically good balance keeping and budget keeping, but in recent years you've seen that this has become a major partisan political issue, where what is normally what's supposed to be a routine update to the amount of debt that we as a country are able to have has become something that has been politically contested. The latest round that you're seeing here in Congress is basically a fight over the fact that over the past several years, Congress has enacted, obviously, significant amounts of increased spending to, one, first combat the coronavirus pandemic, and now President Joe Biden and Democrats are interested in obviously advancing large portions of their sweeping agenda, which will also add likely increase the federal deficit as well. This comes after $8 trillion were added to the federal deficit under former President Donald Trump, and is causing budget deficit hawks to again cry that the debt is a major issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
The debt ceiling, which was, as I said, originally conceived as a way of constraining the financial constraining irresponsible budget behavior, is something that has now become just mired in this much larger political debate.
Yeah. To summarize what's being said politically, right? The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has said, well, Democrats don't want to include us in negotiations. Now they want help raising the limit on the credit card. And the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, says, wow, funny you're saying that, because during the Trump years, Republicans had no problems, right? The deficit hawks were nowhere to be found when it came to the budget. Have we ever not raised the debt ceiling?
No, the U.S. has never not raised the debt ceiling. And actually, since we first established the concept of the debt ceiling in 1917, we've raised it or modified it 98 times. The U.S. has also never defaulted on its loans, which is what would be the threat of if we didn't raise the debt ceiling. By consequence of not raising the debt ceiling, if what the Treasury has to do at the moment, for instance, is referred to as what we call extraordinary measures, which is basically just a term for very fancy budget keeping and shifting around funds to make sure that the government is able to figure out how to pay its debts without action from Congress. But barring that, and if those don't suffice, then Congress would have to default on the debt. That's something that we've never actually done as a country before, because in the end, Congress has always decided to raise the debt ceiling. What functionally the debt ceiling is in the modern day is a basic political fight where either different sides of the aisle or Congress going through the president gets to say, well, your spending plan brought us to this point, so we need to make certain concessions. But it's not something that ever has actually been debated. Well, maybe we actually shouldn't raise this. Maybe we should actually default, or dare we say, cut the federal debt enough so that we actually remain below the debt ceiling.
Yeah. We're speaking with Matt Brown, White House reporter at USA Today, talking about the debt ceiling. So is it a negotiating tool? Is that its basic use at this point in time?
Partly, yes. So actually in 2019, the Congress passed a budget that actually suspended the debt ceiling for 2 years and then readjusted it so that Congress would not have to address it again until August 2021. That's currently the crisis that we're in. But what's important about that specific 2019 point is that they negotiated it so that you could have a very sweeping budget that would go past the 2020 presidential election. That way, President Donald Trump at the time wouldn't have to deal with those issues going into an election year, and then neither would a divided Congress where Democrats controlled the House and Republicans still controlled the Senate. So it's oftentimes been a political debate that you're seeing going on here, much more so than actual debates over fiscal policy.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Brown, White House reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, which tech giants do we place our trust in? This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. What's the tech company that you trust the most? Investors Business Daily surveyed U.S. consumers about how much they trust tech companies with their personal info. The goal was to develop a trust index to gauge which companies are perceived as the best stewards of our data. Among the findings, Amazon.com got the highest marks, Facebook among the lowest. And new companies like Airbnb and Uber proved mediocre to subpar among tech stocks. In-depth analysis from Rob Enderle, founder of The Enderle Group. Rob, your take.
In this particular survey, it put Amazon at the top, and Facebook at the bottom. And the danger, of course, is if you're an untrusted company and you're facing regulatory issues, which both Amazon and Facebook is with antitrust challenges, it's much more likely the untrusted company is going to get hit than the trusted company, because people like the trusted company and will defend it. The untrusted company, they're going to think they deserve whatever it is they're going to get. And so if you're a politician, you're going to get much less pushback if you tear apart Facebook than if you tear apart Amazon. Google actually is fairly highly trusted, as is Apple. In fact, if you look at the companies under risk, you see that Amazon, Facebook, Apple, that Facebook's probably the one that's going to get hit the hardest, because yeah, they are the least trusted. And if you look at and you experience these firms, I don't know if you bought stuff off Facebook ads, but about 50% of the time, the stuff is just junk. You're just being scammed. They make no effort to assure the products that are selling on the site are the products you're actually going to get. I mean, $75 dragon that was supposed to be a $450 dragon on sale. It turned out to be a $5 dragon that had been marked up, and just an inflatable piece of crap. And that is often the case with Facebook. It's a total crapshoot. You order something, it may show up just fine. For Amazon, if you have a problem with them, eBay, PayPal, they'll stand behind the service and make you whole. And so even if you deal with somebody, a third party, that's selling through Amazon, Amazon has your back. And that makes you much more likely to have Amazon's back.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. We're talking about the most and least trusted tech companies. TikTok, as popular as it is among, say, teenagers and young adults, rated very low. How come?
Well, once again, because of the issues with regard to TikTok. They've been embarrassed by the platform. The platform hasn't had their back. The ads on TikTok have done all right. But once again, there seems to be no effort to make sure that the ads are for good stuff as opposed to bad stuff. And so they're breaching trust. Other examples are Airbnb and Uber, which rank kind of in the middle of the pack. Airbnb is hurt by the number of properties that, you know, people rent a property in Airbnb and they get to the property and it doesn't exist. It's a scam. Now, they try to make you whole, but the thing is they're not doing enough, making enough of an effort to correct it. Plus, you've already ruined your entire vacation. There's only so much Airbnb can do. So part of it has to do with their product. And of course, Uber's had a whole series of issues with regard to drivers that have abused passengers. And we did have that one death where somebody got into a car they thought was an Uber car and it turned out not to be, and the guy killed the woman. Now, that wasn't necessarily Uber's fault, but it still reflects on whether you trust the company. And they did step up to the problem and make a legitimate effort to fix it. But it means that they're less trusted than they overall would be. In fact, with Uber, the screwy thing with them is their primary customer should be the driver, but they seem to think their customer is the rider. And the end result of that particular conflict raises a distrust because nobody's sure who the heck Uber's actually serving. So they also have kind of an image problem that's core to their service.
What does that mean for stock prices, for at least for these publicly traded companies?
Well, people like to invest in companies they like. People like Apple a lot. Apple's one of the most valuable, I think still the most valuable company on the exchanges as a result. If they don't trust or like your service, they're not as likely to invest in you.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, principal analyst and founder of the Enderle Group.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies advisors do. They have the tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get to where you want to go.
Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to check out a podcast of the program. You can find it on our website this morning with GordonDeal.com or on all the popular podcast platforms. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
In less than a week, the Taliban has overrun a quarter of Afghanistan's provincial capitals across the north of the country. 10 provincial capitals have now fallen to the insurgent group, in some cases with minimal resistance from the Afghan security forces. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says it's up to Afghan forces to deal with this.
They have the advantage in numbers, in operational structure, in air forces, and in modern weaponry. And it's really about having the will and the leadership to use those advantages to their own benefit.
Besides the provincial capitals that have already fallen, another dozen or so are under imminent threat.
Number two.
The Biden administration is moving to address concerns about rising energy prices. The NSA is calling on OPEC to move faster to restore the global supply of petroleum to pre-pandemic levels. And the White House has asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the domestic gasoline market for any anti-competitive behavior that could be impacting prices. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
This is a long-term issue, and we want to send the clear message that we are going to take steps, whether they are using the bully pulpit or otherwise, to make sure we are going after anti-competitive behavior.
Number three.
A federal judge has ruled that House Democrats who have spent years investigating Donald Trump are entitled to some of the former president's financial records. The ruling empowering Congress to have the records is the latest development in years-long legal and political skirmishes over access to Trump's closely held finances. Volunteers and county employees set up cots and stacked up water bottles in an air-conditioned cooling center in Portland, one of many such places being set up as the Northwest sees another stretch of sizzling temperatures. Scorching weather is also hitting other parts of the country. Heat warnings are in effect from the Midwest to the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic through at least tomorrow. Zoom wants to make it harder for your kids to get distracted when they're online. The app is rolling out a new focus mode, which can be used by anyone but is perfect for teachers. Once the host enables focus mode, the other participants will no longer be able to see each other on the call. The host will still have access to all participants' webcams, but other people will not be distracted by the live videos of their peers. Zoom says students won't be distracted by their peers or feel self-conscious about turning on their own camera.
That stinks. This was designed with me in mind, because when I'm on a Zoom call, I like to text other people during the call to see if I can watch them look down at their phone and laugh. So, I know, poor attention span.
Right.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. One of the most hyped regular season contests in Major League Baseball history will occur tonight in Dyersville, Iowa, when the Yankees and White Sox face off in the Field of Dreams game, the first real-life competition to take place at a de facto movie set. MLB constructed a 7,900-seat pop-up ballpark adjacent to the small field created for the 1989 film. The field has been maintained ever since. There's a corn maze. There are cardboard cutouts of the most popular Yankees and White Sox players. There's audio from the film playing as fans walk the quarter mile from the original field to the temporary one. The New York Post says TV viewers, meanwhile, can get their nostalgia cinema fix by seeing the players enter from the 10 to 12 foot high corn stalks in right field, just as in the film. The hand-operated scoreboard and the barnwood on the outfield walls and behind home plate. Oh, there's also a culinary concoction called an apple pie hot dog, created by Guy Fieri. It's a hot dog wrapped in an apple pie crust with filling. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.